Hello, my friends. A crazy statement in Parliament by a Liberal MP and a crazier tweet by a Liberal cabinet minister. I want to show you all about it. I want you to see the statement, so I want you to get the video version of this podcast. Go to rebelnewsplus.com, click subscribe. It's $8 a month. Not only do you get that outstanding video content every weeknight, but you support Rebel News, and we need the help because we don't take any money from Trudeau, and it shows. All right, here's today's podcast. Tonight, such a revealing lie from a Trudeau cabinet minister. It's May 9th, and this is the Ezra Levant Show.
Shame on you, you censorious thug.
Hey, take a look at this tweet from Marcy Ian, a former TV news reader, now a Trudeau cabinet minister for Toronto. You can see it there. There's a picture of the House of Commons, and she says, denounce neo-Nazism or leave the room. Conservatives, leave the room. 690,000 views of that tweet. And look at that. Who can reply? Accounts Marcy Ian mentioned can reply. In other words, she turned off the ability for Canadians to talk back, to answer back, to ask questions. But look at what Elon Musk has on Twitter. It's wonderful. It's something called Community Notes, where ordinary readers can fact check politicians. It really is one of my favorite functions on Twitter. And look what viewers say. As per official House of Commons question period transcript and video, the speaker ordered Polyev to exit the chamber after Pierre called the prime minister and his policies wacko. Pierre eventually withdrew the word but replaced it with extreme, at which the speaker ordered him out for the day. So that's a sort of a homemade, crowdsourced reply. People voted on it. And the community note, I don't know if you can see that, it links to a video that proves that's the case. There's so much in here. It's an 11-word tweet. But I think there's 1,000 words to say about it. I mean, the first is the most obvious. It was a lie. I mean, just a lie from a former, I'm not going to call Marcy Ian a former journalist. She was just sort of a news reader. I don't think she actually did any journalism. But I would call that fake news. It's sort of gross that a news reader would say something. So like that, she tried to trick the public. She implied that there was a call to challenge neo-Nazism. Pierre Polyev wouldn't, so the speaker kicked him out. That is completely made up. And it's still on the internet to this day. It's literally not true. It lied about Nazis. It used Nazis as, I don't know, a joke, as a political tool to poke Pierre Polyev. This from a cabinet minister, Marcy Ian, who gave a standing ovation to Yaroslav Hunka, the actual Nazi SS officer invited by the prime minister to parliament when Vladimir Zelensky from Ukraine was in town. So Nazism, neo-Nazism, or the original Nazis is not a joke, but it is to the liberals, even though they themselves brought a Nazi to parliament. And it's even worse because there actually are new Nazis stalking our country right now. You can see them, bizarrely, not in the country with hicks, as is the stereotype of Nazis, but no, in the downtown college campuses across this country, from UBC to U of T to McGill and everywhere. Hey, where are the fact checkers here? We saw the Community Notes fact check, but where's a CBC fact check? Where's a Reuters fact check? Where's a Associated Press fact check? I know about all those things because they fact check conservatives all the time. I've never seen them fact check a liberal, have you? And yet you have a pure lie here, using Nazis as a partisan weapon, completely false. Not only is there no fact check, but that remains online, 690,000 people. Well, look at this from a liberal MP, Talib Nurmohamed, He's a guy who got famous flipping houses in Vancouver, and now he's got advice for housing. Just watch this statement he made just for a moment. Take a look.
Speaker, May 3rd commemorated World Press Freedom Day, a day when we celebrate journalists for the work that they do, the risks they take to keep us informed. They pay a high price, Mr. Speaker, from attacks by authoritarian regimes to criminal enterprises. Journalists risk life and limb pursuing truth. This year, the price was high. The deadliest year on record, 115 journalists dead in conflict zones, the word press emblazoned on their flak jackets, sharing stories that we need to hear. Hundreds more languishing in jail. While the Leader of the Opposition and others, as we've just heard, boast about putting for sale signs on the CBC, many around the world are putting up gravestones instead. It's a short trip from rhetorical attacks to the press to actual violence. As journalists perish in jails and newsrooms dim their lights, truth and fiction become harder and harder to distinguish. I am proud to be part of a government that stands with journalists, champions facts over misinformation, and reinforces democratic values which we hold dear.
Yeah, it's quite something when a liberal stands up with a straight face to talk about World Press Freedom Day. We know all about that. They love to talk about journalists being harassed in other countries. And of course, I don't want journalists harassed anywhere. But they have no comments about journalists being harassed here in Canada, including journalists being jailed here in Canada, including journalists being harassed and beat up and assaulted and falsely arrested by the Liberal Party's bodyguards. For example, this, just a few months ago, when Chrystia Freeland's bodyguards arrested David Menzies.
Ms. Freeland, how come the IRGC is not a terrorist group? Why is your government supporting Islamo-Nationalism?
You're under arrest for assault.
They arrested him and they humiliated him and they handcuffed him and they put him in a police car. But at least they didn't beat him up like they did a couple years ago when it was Trudeau's bodyguards. This is a horrible video I'm going to show you. But funny how this didn't make it into Talib Nur Mohammed's little statement about press freedom. Remember this atrocious moment?
What are you doing?
Get off me. Hey, I can... Hey, this is assault.
Move.
I'm on a side...
What is this?
I'm on a sidewalk. I am on a side...
What is this? You cannot touch me. Not rushing or working. Hey! Are you kidding? Let go of me. What is this?
You can't. Am I under arrest?
As you know, we're suing the government on both of those matters. But that line that Nur Mohammed said, it's a short trip from rhetorical attacks on the press to actual violence. Well, I guess that's true because Justin Trudeau has made rhetorical attacks on Rebel News, and then his bodyguards did resort to actual violence. So I suppose there's some truth there. But again, this was not the Liberals scrutinizing their own conduct, but rather demonizing and denouncing Pierre Poilievre as if he has ever caused or called for violence against journalists. Absolutely outrageous. Stay with us for more. You've heard of the Oscars, you've heard of the Junos, but have you heard of the Teddies? It is an award given out by the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, but it's probably not the kind of award you want to win. Here to explain what the Teddies are and who the winners or losers are this year is our friend Franco Terrazano, the boss of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation himself. Franco, great to see you again.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Ezra.
Well, you know, it's great to see you. I think sometimes there's a prize for a loser. Like in golf, they always have one prize for the highest score, just to make the losers feel better about themselves. Tell me about the Teddies. That's not an award you want to win, am I right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So this was our 26th annual Teddy Waste Awards, where we give golden pig trophies to, you know, the politician and bureaucrats who go above and beyond in wasting taxpayers' money with the funniest and worst examples of government waste uncovered over the past year. Now, the Teddies are actually named after a former federal appointee, Ted Weatherall, who back in the 90s had a raft of dubious expenses, including a $700 meal expense to the taxpayer for two. And remember, back in the 90s, $700, nowadays that'd be like, what, over a grand. So we just had a live event in Calgary handing out these pig-shaped trophies to those politicians and bureaucrats who really deserve it.
Wow, imagine having that named after you. I mean, you know, sometimes in science, they name after a comet after someone and they're forever remembered for that discovery. But having a waste award named after you, that's going to be a heavy burden. You know, a $700 meal is shocking. It reminds me of that phrase, I think it was in the Canadian Parliament years ago, a million here, a million there, pretty soon you're talking real money. I mean, these people just throw around taxpayers' money like it's monopoly money. And but I guess you got to laugh about it, because what's the alternative? I suppose it's to cry. Tell us who this year's winners are. I guess we're the losers as taxpayers, but who are the winners this year?
Well, let's start with the federal government waste winner, CBC President Catherine Tate, right? Handing out $15 million in bonuses at the CBC in 2023. You know, remember in 2023, just before Christmas, Tate announced hundreds of layoffs, all while begging for more taxpayer cash. You know, Tate is claiming the cupboards are bare. The cupboards are bare. We need more taxpayers' money. Well, apparently they're not so bare that the CBC isn't handing out, you know, millions of dollars in bonuses. So Tate is a very worthy recipient of the Federal Waste Award this year for all the bonuses they're paying out at that state broadcaster.
You're so right. And she was just in Parliament, I think it was yesterday, and she was pressed on it because she claimed no bonuses, and she wouldn't answer the question. Let me show you a clip from yesterday. There's this notion of unparliamentary language. You don't want to be too rude. And the Speaker of the House will say, tut, tut. It's weird that MPs can't accuse each other of lying. That's against the rules. But lying itself is not against the rules. And I don't know if that applies to committee witnesses. I don't think it does. But I think we got ourselves a bit of a liar here. Take a look at this clip from yesterday.
Have you been assigned a bonus for 2023? I realize the board hasn't signed off on it, but have you been assigned a bonus for 2023?
No, I have not.
You have not been assigned a bonus for 2023?
I have not.
So for 2023, there is no bonus coming your way.
I do not know that I have a bonus because the process, as we have described, for governor and council positions is separate from performance pay. My process is that I will be evaluated by the board of directors. A letter of recommendation will go to the government, and the government will reflect upon whether or not I or other appointees would receive any performance pay.
Has the board package for that June meeting gone out?
No.
No. Okay, because you are a member of that board.
I am.
So you not only have a say with regard to bonuses for the top executives, yourself included, you have a say not only in March when you're a member of the management team, the most senior member of the management team, but then you get a second say at the board level. So with all due respect, you do have a fair bit of power in terms of bonuses. So I'll ask again, will you be up for a bonus in the consideration at the board meeting in June?
As I've said previously, this is part of an internal deliberation. It's an HR function. But, and we have to be respectful of the governance that rules the CBC Radio-Canada.
But you do know the answer.
I absolutely do not know the answer until I've had those deliberations with the board of directors. I cannot preemptively say what the results of a future conversation will
be. Sure,
39
seconds. You know what the recommendation is. You know what the recommendation is going forward to the board.
I think I've repeated myself enough to say these are matters that concern the organization that operates at arm's length, like all Crown corporations,
you are the senior member of the management team, which makes the decisions, and then those decisions get recommended to the board, which you are a member of the board. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you have access to information.
Point of order, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this question has been asked, I think, six times now.
Well, Franco, I mean, she is in a terrible position because either she admits she gave herself a bonus and she says what it is, and she has the wrath of taxpayers for that, or she just brazens it out. I don't know. I think she is atrocious. I don't know if she's still flying back and forth from her house in Brooklyn to New York. She did that for the longest time. She lived in New York and commuted back and forth to the office for the CBC. And I can only imagine that we paid for those flights. Okay, that's Catherine Tate. I think you're right. I think she's atrocious. I even think some CBC staff really, really hate her. Because she's such a bad look for them. Anyways, let's move on to the next one. Tell me about the provincial Teddy winner. So you've got 10 provinces and 3 territories to choose from there.
Well, this year's winner went to the Alberta Foundation of the Arts. Okay, they spent $30,000 flying a Lethbridge artist to places like South Korea and New York. Now, in New York, you see one of her paintings, and I think it could be best described as ants on a Pop-Tart, okay? Then she went to South Korea, and the performance, if we can call it that, essentially just looked like her whopping around on a futon for like 8 minutes. And what do taxpayers get out of this? Well, we get a $30,000 bill, courtesy of the Alberta Foundation of the Arts. So honestly, like, you got to see this video. We'll be sharing it online at taxpayer.com on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that kind of stuff. But once you see it, you will be shocked that taxpayers were forced to pay for this artist to go to fancy places like South Korea, New York.
I got 2 questions for you. The first is, it's called the Alberta Foundation for the Arts, which implies it's a charity. But does it get government money? I presume it does, since you're the Taxpayers Federation.
Yeah, this was...
Go ahead.
This was $30,000 of taxpayers' money to fly this artist.
See, that's crazy. I mean, if some rich person wanted to give $30,000 out of their own money to pay for this weird junket...
Who cares?
I'd say, you know what? Fill your boots. Chacun a son goût, as the French say. Everyone has their taste. But for taxpayers to be pressed to do that. Now, I got to say the obvious. Alberta has, at least in name, a conservative government. Danielle Smith, and before her, Jason Kenney. So this is going on. You can't pawn this off on the Liberals or the NDP. This is allegedly in the most conservative government in the country.
Well, Ezra, and this is just like the bigger problem when it comes to government waste more broadly, is that a lot of times you have the unelected bureaucrats that are running the show, right? Like, you have these politicians, even sometimes the best politicians, if we're being generous here, they may want to cut spending, but then you have so many unelected bureaucrats that are really running the show in government that are making these types of decisions. So what you got to do is you have to have the unelected politicians really go in there and clean house and totally rearrange who's making the decisions, right? So this is one of the problems we see all the time, is that you have these unelected bureaucrats spending buckets of taxpayer cash, essentially just looking for things to spend other people's money on.
Yeah, you know what? When I see something called the Alberta Foundation for the Arts, I actually get a good feeling about it, because I like all 3 words. I like Alberta, I like the arts, and foundation, in my mind, I think, oh, this is a charity. People are being asked to do something selfless, donate a few bucks. But it's actually a deceptive name, because it's the bureaucrats' taxpayers fund for, I mean, and art, I guess, is in the eye of the beholder. I think that if we wrapped up so many of these government charities and reduced taxes, people would give generously. I mean, historically, the arts always had private benefactors. The Renaissance itself, they didn't tax people in Florence. It was the patrons. It was the Medicis, a very wealthy family, who said, we want to be known forever, so we're going to make this eternal art. I don't think it was extracted from working people in Florence. I think if we encouraged a spirit of charity and reduced taxes to let people have a few extra bucks in their pocket, we would see charity naturally occurring. And by the way, people would be more insistent that their charity money was spent wisely, don't you think?
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely on the money with that one there, Ezra. Now, I got to go into one more example at least, okay? Lifetime Achievement Award.
This is the big one.
It's our most prestigious award, folks. You know, Bev Oda has won the award, Bombardier, Governors General. This year's award is a little-known slush fund that you may not have heard of, and that is now axed, in large part because of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation work on this, but it's the Mission Cultural Fund. Okay. Now we
and
first
again,
learned
very
about
vague.
This.
It's these names, Franco. Because who could be against a Mission Cultural Fund? Tell me what it really yep. does, though. What's it really about?
Well, listen to this. Okay, listen to this. So it was a federal slush fund in Global Affairs Canada, and they spent money like a $10,000 birthday party for Margaret Atwood.
Oh, come on.
In New York.
Oh, yep. come on. She has her own friends. She can have her own birthday party.
Yeah, she's got her own money too.
Yeah.
And then how about this one? A $52,000 photo exhibit for rock star Bryan Adams so he can show off his totally awesome photos, including one of Trudeau. And folks,
that's why he got
just started.
You know, I like Bryan Adams. I grew up listening to him. I think he's a good egg from what I can tell. And he is a good photographer. He's also a gazillionaire who has all sorts of corporate support, his music label. Why taxpayers would have to pay for Bryan Adams, a literal rock star, to have an exhibit? I think you gave away the answer, though, because he took a picture of Justin Trudeau. I think that's why.
Well, okay, folks, and here's a warning. If you got children in the room, it might get a little crazy, but this was from the government, okay? They spent $8,800 on a sex toy show in Germany. $8,800 on a sex toy show in Germany. It gets worse. We found this description from the government of another musical, a lesbian pirate musical featuring physically disabled performers who met in love while cross-dressing as male pirates. Your money paid for that performance. And you know what, though? After all of this, the Mission Cultural Fund, they stuck with it until there was one thing that finally put it over the top. And what was the one thing that finally killed the Mission Cultural Fund?
I don't want to even guess. I'm too scared to guess, Franco.
Sex stories from senior citizens in other countries, okay? So the federal government dropped $12,000 paying senior citizens in other countries to talk about their sex lives in front of live audiences. And folks, these weren't even Canadian seniors. Ezra, we were outsourcing old people's sex stories.
You know what? I've got a million questions about that pop into mind, but I'll stick with the safe one, which is why on earth were we paying for that? You know, they just, I suppose every government Trudeau's been in office for 9 years now. I suppose every government gets really, really comfortable spending other people's money. I bet a lot of this is the deep state, the permanent bureaucrats who never change with the election. But I think there's a lot of room to cut the fat before we raise taxes on people. That's for sure. Franco, you guys are doing important work. And as we indicated a moment ago, it's nonpartisan work. What I like about you guys is you're willing to call out the overspending and waste of taxpayers' money, even and especially by conservative parties. And that's why people trust you, Franco, because they know you're not in anyone's pocket. They know you're 100% membership supporters, like ordinary people, crowdfunding. And so you can call out, quote, our team, speaking as a conservative, and that's extremely valuable. So keep up the great work. What's the website people can go to check it out?
Taxpayer.com.
That's a great website. Taxpayer.com. There is Franco Terrazano, one of the good guys. Keep in touch, my friend.
Thanks, Ezra. Appreciate
it. See you later. Stay with us. More ahead. Hey, welcome back. Some letters about my trip to Ireland. Aid says, letting an aggressive young man into a country or city or town or village, what can go wrong? It's almost like someone wants trouble. Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, by the way, a lot of the migrants in Ireland are Ukrainian. And putting aside the issues of the war, shouldn't a young military-age Ukrainian be fighting in Ukraine? Certainly Vladimir Zelensky says so. I don't know why, and when you saw me going through that migrant camp along the canal in Ireland, I only saw men. Why are single men coming in as refugees? I don't get it. Vinstar says, the Irish didn't fight for their land for centuries to be extinguished from their own country. Leave the EU, start there. I did meet a couple of candidates for an Irish Brexit when I was there. That was interesting. But I got to say this. Who made the decision to bring so many migrants to Ireland? Well, the influence came from NGOs and George Soros and the UN and the EU, the World Economic Forum. Sure, the influence did. But the final decision, seems to me, was made by the Irish government itself. That's what's so astonishing. And Sinn Féin, which is one of the left-wing parties there, I only knew it as the political face of the IRA, you would think that they would be the most adamant about Irish sovereignty. Again, I shouldn't wander around historical issues about which I know very little. But it was astonishing to me to learn that Sinn Féin is for open borders. Brother, I thought you were for Ireland for the Irish. Very unusual, but I'm very glad I went there. I hope to go back again. Well, that's the show for today. Until next time, on behalf of all of us here at Rebel World Headquarters, to you at home, good night, and keep fighting for freedom.
David Menzies for Rebel News here at so-called Little Gaza. That would be the lawns of the University of Toronto. We have several members of the Jewish community and their allies marching, doing a counter demonstration against the Hitler Youth Movement that has occupied the lawns for a week now. And I am with a supporter here. Sir, what is your name again?
Aaron Hadida. I'm the National Director of Hirut Canada.
Okay. Sir, who do you have more contempt for, the thugs that are occupying the lawns or the administration that is allowing them and enabling them to do so?
That's a great question, David. Absolutely the administration. This should never be allowed. This is Canada. This is not some Middle Eastern country. This isn't a third world country. This is Canada. We're here to uphold Canadian values and show everybody that we are allowed freedom here. We're not afraid to express our freedoms. We're not afraid of these people. We came to show them they can set up 1,000 camps and we will walk into every one of them because this is a free country.
I would challenge you on that, sir. Can you actually walk onto the lawns? My cameraman, Lincoln Jay, and I were here on Monday and we saw many despicable scenes, but the worst was two elderly Jewish U of T professors who were physically barred from walking onto the lawns, and the special constables, they said nothing and shrugged their shoulders.
Well, okay, so absolutely not. You can't walk onto them. They've got it fenced off. They've got their little security guys watching the perimeter of the fences, and the administration, again, is responsible for that. A Jewish student who goes to school here, whose parents are funding it, are not allowed to go to class. Yep. That is the biggest travesty of it all. And we are here to show people that this is Canada. This isn't a communist country yet, but this is Canada. And at the end of the day, we're here to support Canada, Canadian values, our beloved country of Israel, and all of the Jewish community and the beautiful Jewish students that go here and that need to see that they have massive support. At the end of the day, it's the administration appeasing the crowd, and it's riot control 101. Appease the bigger crowd because it's a lot easier than appeasing the smaller crowd. They are calling people in Israel occupiers while occupying universities around the world. This is a game to these students. They think they're reliving Woodstock or the 60s and rebelling at Berkeley. This is not what's happening. They don't know what their cause is. They don't know anything about the cause. If you ask them which river and which sea, they scratch their heads. Mm. The bottom line is they're doing this for fun. It's the new TikTok trend to them. That's all it is.
It's the two eyes, isn't it? Ignorance and indoctrination on campus.
Absolutely.
And who better to indoctrinate than the ignorant? I think you're right. I don't think they can name the river and the sea. I don't think they could pinpoint Gaza on a map if you were to ask them to.
No, they're taking up a cause for something they have no historical knowledge about. They have no idea. They don't know where the region is. They don't know who the people are. They don't know who's indigenous to the land. They don't know who isn't. The bottom line is they don't care. All they care about is that they're rebelling against the system. That's all it is. The keffiyeh that they're wearing is a form of rebellion. They're emulating terrorists, and it's being allowed to happen in North America. We do not allow that type of behavior in a democratic society, yet here we are.
To bring it back.
You can can have an encampment over here on private property espousing genocide from the river to the sea, intifada, and that's okay? Can you explain that to me?
I have no words. I can't explain it myself. I think we have to ask our government what's going on.
I, for the life of me, cannot understand why the university allows this terror encampment to continue. And I worry that the university is actually aiding and abetting, because it's university fencing, it's university property. I don't know how porta potties got brought in there, and I don't understand why there is a gatekeeping happening to who gets admitted and who doesn't get admitted, where Jews are actually excluded from entering the encampment, even university professors who happen to be Jewish.
They have no idea the history of Israel or that land when they have, and they are calling and chanting from the river of to the sea. What you say, they have no idea which river and which sea. They have no idea what's mean that. And it's very concerning. I come in, I escaped from a dictatorship who put you in jail for your belief, for you speak in public, for a public demonstration, and now see that kind of behavior here in Canada, the hate speech that they are, and it's insane.
We are here for Canada. Yes. Today we are here for Canada. Yes. Why we are here?